In this episode of TWIP, it's all about mastering the art of Photoshop with Renee Robin.
This is TWIP.
All right, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about Photoshop, you guessed it, along with a bunch of other things that relate to image processing and post-processing on the computer, and how we can make our photography better, and how, if you're into it, you might go down the path of Renee Robin to becoming a world-class compositing artist. So, to talk about that is Renee Robin. Renee Robin's here to open the kimono a little bit and tell us about her process with regard to editing photos. Renee, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hey. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's good to see you. You look fantastic as always. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah, totally. Thanks for having me. It should be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get started, let's just catch up, because every now and then I get a message or I see a Facebook post or something from you that is you're in some corner of the world. Like the last one, you were knee deep in snow somewhere shooting gladiators or something.
Oh yeah. That was 2 days ago.
What is going on? Where are you now?
I'm actually back in Alberta for the first time since you and I have done a TWIP episode since the first one.
Wow, really? And what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing out there? Are you shooting? Are you visiting? Are you hanging out? What?
I've been rebuilding my website, so that's just a gigantic job. So it just requires being in one spot with access to all the files under the sun.
Yeah.
So that means being at home. Yeah.
I remember, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we were having a very similar conversation about you rebuilding your website.
It's finished now, though. It's actually live.
It is live. So what's the URL so people can go hit it right now?
Yeah, if you want to check it out, it's reneerobinphotography.com.
Renee Robin.
Super unique.
So go there. So people that are watching this live or whatever, even later, just go to that site and check it out. And you'll understand.
This is actually the first public announcement of it being live. So there you go, Frederick.
A TWIP exclusive. But seriously, go check it out, because some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about will start making sense in terms of the Renee's workflow and why she puts so much effort into what she's doing. So Renee, I want to kick this off. So earlier today, actually, so we, my buddy Troy Miller and I were recording a TWIP Pro photo critique, where we were just sort of, you know, shooting the breeze about images and processing, and the topic came up of, is it time to leave Adobe or leave Photoshop because of all the tools that are out there, you know, like Capture One and Affinity Photo and all that stuff. And my response was, for a lot of people, yeah, it is. You can viably replace Photoshop with other tools, but for another huge group of people, you can't. And your name came up as one of those people in terms of you, the switching costs would be detrimental to the art process, right? So you want to elaborate on a little of that? I mean, could you theoretically switch away from Photoshop right now if you wanted to?
I've looked into a few different programs that are out there, and so far for what I'm doing, there isn't anything that will switch for me yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the other side of it is, how much time can I take away to master another program?
Right.
So that I can do what I need to do really, really quickly, really, really efficiently. Yeah. So right now, you know, Photoshop and Capture One are the two animals that I'm using, and I'm using a lot of.
Yeah.
But I am really interested in what's out there, because other programs that are coming out are going to be doing different things that Photoshop isn't doing. So maybe instead of it being like, oh, I'm going to replace it, I'm going to add another program to the wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Why does it? Yeah. I say that on TWIP all the time. Why do photographers always say or, when it can very easily just be and, right?
Yeah, no, have your cake and eat it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to use the time wisely. I know you got limited time. So let's dive in and talk about hardware first, right? So that's the basis of everything. Whenever I see you, I tease you about your computer, because, and I use the term, or your laptop, and I use the term laptop loosely, because it's like a Mission Impossible briefcase of a computer, but it could be a desktop easily. So tell us about your hardware configuration and why you're using what you use.
Yeah. So I basically have a mobile desktop. I did a job with Intel a few years ago, and we built a custom computer with Puget Systems that didn't exist yet, really. So that's cool, but it's been 3 years since then, and it's had the crap kicked out of it, and I've been running it hard and fast for a long time, for many hours a day.
Yeah.
But it's got 3 hard drives in it. It's got 32 gigs of RAM. You know, they're all SSD drives. It's got the graphics processor. I may have made a different decision knowing what software was coming out, but at the time it was the best decision I could make. It's NVIDIA stuff and blah. That shit's all boring.
Yeah.
That stuff is all boring.
That's fine. You're fine.
First Here. Shot of whiskey.
But yeah, I mean, I remember you and I were, God, I forget how long ago it was, but it was a while back, and we were in a mall. We went into you were here visiting for something, went into the mall and into the Microsoft store, because I think you were considering at the time moving to a Surface tablet.
Yeah, I was, and they just can't handle the workflow still. I actually just got a Wacom Mobile Studio Pro, one of the brand new ones, the 16-inch, and it's awesome, but it completely changes my workflow. So I use it for making completely different stuff than what I do day to day.
Yeah.
But even still, with the new technology, it really struggles with the PSB files that I want to run and that I do run.
Well, let's talk about that. That's the workflow stuff I want to really dive into, because I looked over your shoulder once. I think it was at Smug Mug down. Remember, you were at Smug Mug and you were working on something. One of the Smug Mug films or something. But I think you had one of your projects open, and I mean, I'm a Photoshop newbie compared to you, and I may have created a document that had 20 layers in it at one time. 20 layers is like you just getting started. You had something with like 60 layers or something ridiculous like that in it.
Yeah, they break the 100 layer thing pretty often.
Like, why? Like, tell me what's going on there. What's the workflow? Like, do you have, a layer for an eyeball, a layer for an eyelash? You're like, what? how does that work?
Indecision is usually what causes a huge amount of layers. Particularly with color grading.
Yeah.
Or I'll make like one group with a file where, you know, like this is the placement of the article of the items, and then I'll make another group where it's the other one. I just alternate back and forth, and I eventually delete one or whatever.
So it's just sort of a track. It's your layers. Are you moving down the path to what the final image is going to be?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like chaos.
But it works. So
it works for me. I don't recommend it for everyone, but you know, the beautiful thing about Photoshop and post-processing is it's always just about finding what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be what works for everyone else. Sometimes other people have really good ideas and you're like, oh, I'd never thought of that before, and it changes everything. And other times you look at it, you try it, and you're like, no, it doesn't really work for me right now, but maybe in 2 or 3 years, right?
So, I mean, is that what you recommend to people that are trying to get their brain around Photoshop? Because Photoshop is a hydra. Right. I mean, it could be many different things. It does everything from 3D to video editing to compositing to on and on. And most people, myself included, only use a small sliver of that. You use a lot more of it, but probably not all of it. If someone's jumping into photography or even compositing right now, mm-hmm. would you guide them towards Photoshop as sort of the industry standard? Or would you say, you know, forego the Creative Cloud subscription and go in another direction? What would your advice be?
I would ask first what they want to do with the images. So, I mean, if people who are, this is kind of the stages that I recommend. And it depends on how technologically literate the user is. So let's say we have somebody who is older and they're really not comfortable with computers, they're really not comfortable with technology, then I'm going to say, like, go with some like really simple programs for image editing, right? If you're just going to be pushing some sliders, I hate saying it because I don't like the program at all, but if they are really uncomfortable with editing, then Lightroom is probably a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Right? I haven't spent any time in Affinity, so I don't have an opinion on that. But for people who are really, really, really uncomfortable with technology, that's often a good place to start.
Yeah.
People who are more, you know, advanced or comfortable with learning new technology, then I would say go with Capture One first if you're not wanting to get into compositing, right? Because they're now doing layering. Their adjustments are super specific. The engine is getting extremely powerful, and the raw converter is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I would say Capture One is a bit of a bear of a program to learn, but it's still extremely powerful. And then if you're wanting to get into layer masking and big composites, then yeah, for sure, like jump into Photoshop. But I don't think there is any one right answer. I mean, I got into Capture One after I was, you know, well proficient in Photoshop.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the question. Even I, you know, I've been using Photoshop since version 2. And, you know, pre-layers, you know, see the gray hairs in it. I think about it and I think, you know, I want to look at these other apps, but then I keep being drawn back to Photoshop because it feels like, okay, I want something that's I'm never going to outgrow. Right. And I feel like if I become better and better and a superhero at using Photoshop, then, you know, I'm going to be good. And I can go to some of these other apps later and play around. But if I'm good at Photoshop, it's kind of like when you're a teenager or whatever, and you're writing your resume and they're like, yeah, you got to have Microsoft Office on there. You know, Photoshop feels like the Microsoft Office of the creative world. Do you agree with that?
Photoshop is like your old girlfriend that you keep going back to that, like, you know, it's a little bit codependent and it's kind of weird, but yet you're always just kind of there for each other, even if you try and see other things. That's what Photoshop is for me.
I titled this episode wrong. Codependency and Photoshop. Good analogy. Very, very. I think most of us in the audience can understand that. That was really good.
I started doing in my lectures breakdowns of Photoshop files that don't work out, and I equate it to like a really bad relationship where like me and Photoshop are in the kitchen and we're just fighting and screaming at each other and nothing's working out, and then eventually we take a break and we walk away and we come back to it later and we're like, okay, we can work on this, like, all right, yeah, I know I still care about you too, you know, we can make this work, and then like a good image, you know, comes out a couple of days later, but you gotta go through the cycle of like hating each other for a little bit. That's me in Photoshop.
Yeah, yeah.
But Photoshop is just always there. Like you just call and it's like, what's up? Until you do an update. And that's when they go crazy. Right. Like 2019 right now, I've watched everyone exploding over these updates. And I'm just like, Photoshop's in a bad place right now. I'm just going to throw chocolate at it and leave the room. Like, come back in a couple months.
That's classic. See, I can see where your mind is at. See, people that are watching this are getting to know the Renee I know. You're like, you know, like the nerd that is trapped in the graphic design and Photoshop compositing world, and you got a foot in cool and nerd at the same time.
I think it's all a matter of opinion.
So workflow wise, so back to the layer piece of it. So I want to make sure we put a pin in that. So when you look at this from the standpoint of you need the horsepower of that giant, massive desktop computer with a handle on it to get your work done.
Tank roller bag.
But yeah. is that a factor of you being inefficient? And I say that with you know, adoration. You know, because you said your workflow is like, okay, I'm ADD. I want to put a layer here for this. Okay, now I need another layer for that. Versus some people that will be more sort of structured in their workflow, thereby needing less horsepower. Like, what's your recommendation? Should people throw horsepower at it and then just play around in that horsepower, or should they be more methodical with their workflow?
Well, I would say both, but I do think that the most frustrating thing is being limited by your technology. I mean, you want the limiting factor to be you, not your gear. Right. So, I mean, I have a lot of clients where I have to build big, big, big images, and they're just like many, many, many megapixels wide and tall, and they have to print really big, and I got to go to a lot of places all over the world, and it has to look perfect. Well, that's just big files. Like, I did some stuff with a 5DSR file and that was massive. Like, I thought working on, you know, 21 megapixel files or 23 megapixel files made big PSB files. And then you're working on a 5DSR file. It's massive. And like, my computer struggled with it and it's no slouch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Then that begs the question. If you're creating these giant files, what's the average file size of one of these massive documents you're working with?
I don't usually make something less than 6 gigs.
A 60 gigabyte file. Okay, so how do you handle backup and retrieval and all that stuff? You're not pushing stuff up to the cloud, especially on the hotel Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, no, just lots of hard drives. Okay. Yeah, I just like go home. So when I'm traveling, I have a couple hard drives. That's the other reason why there's 3 hard drives in the computer. So there's always one backup there, and then another backup on a separate drive that's hidden elsewhere.
Love it.
Or mailed home or whatever needs to be done, or I'll just like buy another drive, because I mean, data drives are cheap right now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I can get a 2 terabyte drive for a couple $100 or less. I can get it probably for $100, copy everything over, mail it home. You know, that's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, have you ever lost data?
I've lost some. It's my internal drive on this computer that we're using right now. My third drive is failing because it's just too hot all the time.
Yeah.
So I lost one folder.
Wow. Yeah, that's not bad. Sucked,
but it was fortunately a shoot that I could actually reshoot. It was one of the few shoots that I hadn't backed up right away.
Yeah.
Because I was photographing my friend's cat for a personal project. So I was like, oh, it's a cat, it'll be fine. And then I went and loaded up the computer one day, and it was just like, oh, hold on, I got this present for you. It's blue, and it's a blue screen, and we're going to give you all these errors. And I was like, no, it's 2 a.m. I'm going to spend the next 13 hours trying to fix this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went and bought another hard drive and backed up everything that I could, but I did lose one folder, but fortunately I was just able to reshoot it, which is really, really lucky.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been something that I couldn't have done.
That sounds amazing. Not having, you know, lost more, but you know, I haven't lost that much either, but you're right. I mean, the whole hard drive space keeps changing in terms of portable hard drives being cheaper and cheaper, and you know, but bandwidth is not really keeping up with that. So being able to get your, if you keep creating 6 gigabyte files and trying to get them uploaded on a hotel Wi-Fi, is probably a non-starter. It's not happening. Yeah, it's not happening. So I want to talk about that a little bit. Just I want to backtrack and talk about workflow a little bit more in terms of your worldview per se, mm-hmm. on how you look at your travels and all this. And you are inspiring to me from the standpoint of you go to certain places, and you're multitasking in lots of places when you travel, but you're looking at textures, you're looking at clouds, you're looking at patterns, and you're capturing them with the eye that you're going to composite them, or you may or may not use them in a later composite. And sometimes you even go places just to capture a particular texture. You want to talk about that a little bit, and what your mindset is with regard to capturing the world for later use?
Yeah, a friend of mine said it kind of eloquently, and I thought it was really funny, but it works really well. He said that I was like a treasure hunter.
Yeah.
And I'm just like running around the planet, kind of like picking up little pieces of treasure and just like sticking them in my bag, like a little ferret, you know, or a squirrel, you know, and I'm just like, I'll take all of these. And I'm going to put them in a bag, and I'm going to hold on to them forever. And I'm like dragging around this gigantic Santa Claus bag of, you know, pieces.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then you use them later, right? It's like you're traveling, gathering clip art.
Exactly. Some stuff doesn't get used for like 5 or 6 years. And then all of a sudden a job comes along and I'm like, I have the thing. I can do the thing, exactly the thing that you're looking for. You know, it's not too often I have to reach out and ask for help from other photographers, which I'm more than willing to do if I need to, but it's so much easier when you just own all the copyright to all your own content if you're making composites.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that being said, though, like, there's lots of sites out there that are doing free stuff, like Pixabay and a bunch of others, and that's great. That's awesome, at least for digital artists.
Yeah.
But it's not always high res enough. You know, sometimes I need the raw files because I'm going to be pushing everything quite far.
Yeah. Well, where do your ideas come from? You know, as people sort of look through the gallery, so I'll put a gallery of your images in the blog post on thisweekinphoto.com of some of your images, or people can just go to ReneeRobinPhoto.com, and I'll put the links to everything. Yeah. And so people can head over there and check out your stuff. But how much of that stuff is self-assigned, and how much is commissioned work for clients? And for the self-assigned stuff, where do those ideas come from? Like, your mind is dark, Renee. It's very dark.
Not that dark. It's not that bad. Honestly, a lot of it just comes from dreaming.
Really? So you wake up, you'll wake up and say, oh, wow, let me sketch and write a note and then make it?
This is really pathetic, which shows a lot of where my head is at all the time, as I will sleep and I will dream the PSD file.
See,
isn't that gross?
You see what I mean, gross. About having 1 foot in geek and 1 foot in cool. See, most
it's pretty.
I'm gonna say, gross. You know, most that's that codependency thing with Photoshop. See, most people I know of don't dream in layers.
Yeah, I know. I'll have an editing problem, like a project that I've been working on for like sometimes a couple years, and then you know, like the girl jumping off the building with the little wings. You know, that one that went all over the place a few years back. That was sleeping on an airplane. I'd been trying to think on how to do that shot for months, and then I was sleeping, and then I dreamed about how to do it, and I woke up, and I was like, oh my god, that's it, and I wrote it all down.
Yeah.
And then I went and did it, right? But I find my conscious brain is too dumb. So the subconscious is smarter than I am. So it's just, yeah.
Welcome to the human condition. What about, there's the idea of dreaming up something and then executing on it. What about when a client comes to you and they're like, you know, we want this, this, and this, and you're like, that's crap. I don't know if I want to do that. How do you draw the line between I could really use that big bag of money versus I'm not going to compromise and create your crap for you? I'm sure you've had those requests before. How do you handle that?
I've had a couple jobs that come to mind that were pretty cringeworthy. So on one hand, you make the decision like, okay, is paying the rent or putting some money into savings or whatever my priority today? Or is like my quote unquote artistic integrity the thing that's important today? And mm-hmm. I kind of just like make that decision.
Based on how hungry you are at the time?
Well, I mean, I'm never going to say no to anything. Or I'm never going to say yes to something that I'm morally against, right? Yeah, like I'm never going to do anything that is, you know, promoting violence or anything like that. Like that's not. Obviously, I'm not going to compromise on that. But, you know, if somebody has like a boudoir idea that they want, and I don't shoot a lot of boudoir, it's not very common.
Yeah.
But let's say I get a boudoir request and, you know, maybe the request is a little odd and I'm pretty liberal, but every now and then you get a question where you're like, that kind of costume? Like, sure. Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, because I also try not to judge.
Yeah.
The challenge comes though is the really hard ones are when they have a really specific idea and I think I can make it work, and then we shoot it, and then I get into editing and I'm like, nope, this is not working. This does not work. I thought it would work and it doesn't work. And so oftentimes then what I'll do, and I've only had to do this twice, where I'll reshoot the client and I'll say like, look, this is what it's looking like. I realize that you probably think this is okay, but I think that we can do this and it'll be way better.
Good.
So like, for example, I don't know if anybody's seen the mermaid photos where she's all tied up lately, mm-hmm. going around the internet. Those went everywhere. So her and I had worked together before on another concept, and you know, she came to me with the idea and I was like, yeah, this is awesome. You know, we'll shoot it, we'll edit it, and I'll get it back to you. And literally many months have gone by since we did that shoot, and I would keep working at it, and I'm just like, this is not working. Like, I thought how we shot it would work. And so finally I just called her up and I was like, what do you say about doing another shoot? And I was like, you know, I'll cover whatever, we'll just do it on like a trade basis or whatever it is. You know, this is the idea that I have. And then sure enough, like, you know, everyone got super excited, got like a huge team together for it, and like really proud of the work, you know, and it looks really, you know, I love it. I think it turned out really, really nicely. I still haven't given up on the other concept because the other concept was really good, but I'm missing a puzzle piece somewhere in my head to make it work. So I'm just going to keep marinating on it, you know, for however long it takes until finally it's like, there's the thing I was missing.
Well, how does that work? That's a good segue, because you we were trading texts a while ago and you were saying that you had just gone through your portfolio, I guess in preparation for the relaunch of the website, and had redone most, if not all, of the images. How does that work? I mean, because the images, I mean, before you redid them, they look great. Now they look fantastic still. But how do you, like, where does your mind go when you're like, you know what? I'm just going to go redo all that. I'm just going to redo all that work. How does that happen and how do you execute on that?
Well, because I liked the work that I did before. The photography and the lighting was good enough, but the digital art wasn't good enough. I didn't think anyways. I figured it could be improved upon. I was like, I have like 8 more years of experience since I've done a lot of these shoots. Mm-hmm. What happens if I apply, you know, this brain now to the photography back then? Like a lot of that stuff was shot on like a 5D Mark I or some of it, a Nikon D80. So I would love to see who can argue with me which camera it was shot on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they won't. Yeah.
Not until you start printing it pretty big, you're probably not going to notice.
So does this, mean in 10 years, total, in 5-10 years, you're going to redo everything again? Or
maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just always just kind of leave it open to that. I mean, I re-edited, I did a mass upload, and I've done more since then, but I did a mass upload and it was 255 re-edits. Wow. And that took me 3.5 months. Jeez. And I didn't use them all. Like, I sent all the updated edits that I did to everyone, like anyone who's involved in the project. So I was like, hey, here you go. Here's a present. Surprise. Like, none of us look like this anymore, but I hope you like it. And so that was actually, it was actually also really cathartic to go back and be like, wow, you know, some of my ideas didn't totally suck. They just weren't finished, you know? And so then I go like, well, what's going to happen in another 10 years? Like, what am I going to be doing then? Am I going to even look at this stuff? Am I going to be doing a completely different career? I don't know, but
yeah, which also, you know, which also means that you've kept the layered Photoshop files of all of your work, and you're able to go back in and open it up and continue working. So you keep everything. So all your work, all the assets that went into them, they're all, you could go back to, you know, 5 years ago and re-edit things. So should people do that? If people are editing and they're into the compositing game, should they keep that layered Photoshop file? Or
that's totally up to you. I mean, that's up to every single person who wants to be a creator. I mean, for me, I just chose to. I think I had lost a hard drive once, like way back when, but it was work that I don't even remember. you know, that was just my decision to have copies of everything. I mean, I'm always paranoid of, like, you know, well, what happens if, like, there's a fire or a third world war or whatever, you know? I'm like, oh, but all these things. I'm like, if I have enough stuff in enough places, like a little squirrel, I'm just like, stash this stuff everywhere. Yeah. Something's probably going to survive, maybe.
Well, Renee, so one of the things I want to talk to you about is, so you're an ambassador for Capture One, right? And I want to know what that means. And I also want to know, I've been hearing, like, over the, an increasing chorus of people singing the praises of Capture One, not so much, some of them in, you know, complete opposition to Lightroom, like, Lightroom, I don't want to use it anymore. This is the grown-up version of Lightroom or whatever. And some people just use it because they say it has better raw processing. Some people like the UI. Once and for all, settle it for the people, I don't know, the 100 people or whatever that are watching this. Once and for all, settle it. Why is Capture One, from the ambassador's mouth, one of the ambassador's mouth, why is Capture One superior and why should I give it a shot?
So for me, the reason why I love Capture One is a different answer than what most people who work as an ambassador for Capture One think that it's awesome. For me, Capture One has this amazing feature for a composite artist. This is the best thing on the face of planet Earth as far as processing goes. And genuinely, like, this is the reason why I said that I would stand behind this program, because it has a feature called overlay. So you shoot tethered and you shoot to the computer, right? So then you can see the poses and whatever else coming up on the screen. But there's an overlay feature. So if you have your background pre-made or even just like loosely sketched out, you can put it over top of your subject while you're shooting so that you match your lighting and your perspective and your camera lens and your distortion perfectly.
Wow.
That's amazing. Wow. Everyone else is like, oh my God, the rock inverted, the detail and the, like, the selective stuff and the blah and the colors and, like, it does all that stuff great. But it has this layer function and it's amazing.
But then other people's, you know, people will say, yeah, it's amazing for that, but, you know, the user interface might be is too complicated. Lightroom is easy. I know there's a develop module and there's some sliders over there. Capture One, you get in there and it's a little more intimidating. Like, what do you say to those people? Should they just suck it up and learn it or stay in Lightroom?
Well, I mean, it all depends on what you want to do, once again, right? So I like the usability in Capture One. I like the way everything can move around. I like the way that you can make it work how you want it to work. So kind of like the way Photoshop does, right? There's a way to make Photoshop work for every single brain. Mm-hmm. And there's a way to make Capture One work for every single brain, but you got to get in there and you got to get your hands dirty for a little while, mm-hmm. right? There's so many tutorials out there. There's so much free content mm-hmm. for how to get good at Capture One. It's astounding. Like, there isn't even like, oh, you have, like, behind a paywall, like, it doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Right. So.
So would you, is that the suggestion you would make for folks? I mean, you know, because photography is one of the fastest growing hobbies, at least in the United States. I don't know if the world, but at least in the United States. And, you know, there's always a new influx of people coming in that want to learn and they want to try different genres and all that stuff. the conventional wisdom changes from year to year on how they should start. So what would your advice be? So if someone comes to you and say, hey, Renee, you know, I love what you do. I want to get started in compositing. I want to be like you. I want to travel the world and capture textures everywhere and start
here. I don't recommend that to anybody.
but in terms of the software choice, like, what's the software choice? Should it be, would you say, dude, just jump into Photoshop and learn that? Or would you say, jump into Lightroom if you're a beginner? Or would you say, Capture One and Photoshop for sure? Or what? What's the right solution to the newbie that's getting in, that's serious about this, that wants to get really good in 5 years? How should they be starting here in 2018, 2019?
Well, here's the thing about any newbie who's actually serious. It doesn't matter. Hmm. Anybody who wants it bad enough is going to figure it out their own way, and nothing's going to stop them.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't matter. It's everyone else who's like, you know, oh, I want the easiest way. I want the fastest way. I want the whatever. That's fine. You know, we can make suggestions all day long, and you can choose whichever one you want. You know, I could say like, oh yeah, Capture One is amazing. And then you like save that as a TIFF and then hop into Photoshop and you can hop back and forth and it's awesome and whatever. But like, let's be honest, the person who really, really wants the stuff isn't going to be asking questions. They're going to be sitting their boots on the ground figuring it out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, that's like the person that really, really wants to be a photographer is not going to obsess over getting the latest Nikon Zine 7 or something. They're going to be like, you know what? What do I have around? What can I use? A phone? I'm going to use that and shoot with it. So
there's like an amazing documentary photographer in Russia who shoots everything on an iPhone and a camera. Right now, I definitely can't pronounce it or spell it properly, but his work is amazing. It is so good, and he's probably just editing it using like Snapseed or whatever iPhone app. If your work is good, especially with the kind of technology that's out there today with cameras, you can't tell me, you know, it's the camera anymore. I mean, I went back and re-edited my entire catalog down to my Nikon D80 and my Canon PowerShot G11.
Wow.
Tell me which ones those were.
That's crazy. The PowerShot, I remember that. I had a G9. I miss my little G9. Yeah. That's how I started on YouTube with that little black G9. I love that thing.
So like that's the thing, right? Is it's just like find a tool, whatever's within your means. If you can afford a $20,000 lens, awesome, go afford a $20,000 lens.
Yeah.
If you can't, then that's also fine. Like whatever you have, if it's in here and you want it bad enough, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we talk about that on This Week in Photo a lot, and that's the idea that some people get stuck in that quicksand of gear, right? It's like, I gotta have the gear, I gotta have this, and oh no, the so-and-so manufacturers come out with another whatever, and I have to have that. And some people tend to start using that as an excuse, and I'm not immune to that, but you'll start using that as an excuse not to shoot. Like, if, hey, I could be like Renee Robin if I had that Mission Impossible briefcase computer she has, right? When it's not true. I mean, you just said, you will still be Renee Robin if all you had was your phone and Snapseed to edit.
Well, have you seen what those kids are doing on Mextures? Like those composite guys with like all the layers and everything? Like they're doing that stuff on their phone.
Yeah.
Like, come on. I mean... Like, there's things that, you know, I've been doing some shooting lately and I've been borrowing a 70-200. Am I thinking about buying one now? Yes. Am I going to buy it new? No. I'm going to get something used because all my gear that I've owned, apart from my computers, although even most of those were used, most of the stuff I get secondhand because I just need the tool to work.
Yeah.
I don't really care if it's new.
That's right. I love that. I love that mindset. I mean, because that's what, like whenever you and I talk and, you know, we've been talking for years and years, it's always refreshing to hear people like you and of your ilk talk, because it's more about the work than it is about the gear, right? And more am I seeing this sort of separation of oil and water in the industry of people that, and there's nothing wrong with being excited about the latest gear, the latest lens. If that's your thing, you know, you want to just get that latest drone, whatever. That's awesome. You know, if you can do it.
Totally. Go that. If that's your thing, do it.
If that's your thing, who cares, right? If you want to have a shelf full of cameras and lenses, and that's awesome. But then on the other side, and I learned this when I was hanging out in Puerto Rico with the RGG EDU guys, we were interviewing all these commercial artists and photographers, and the one thing I noticed that was similar between all of them versus a lot of the people that we talked to on TWIP is very rarely did the topic of what camera they used come up, or or what, you know, that kind of stuff. It was more about, hey, I'm working on this project and I'm trying to get this thing and I'm trying to use some paper mache to try to get this look, you know, that kind of thing versus the tool, the paintbrush or the canvas. Yeah. It was more about the idea and the execution. And do you feel that way? Like you like it's more about the art itself than it is about the hardware? Or do you think they're like kind of one begets the other? Like you can't do a lot of this stuff without the right hardware. How do you come in on that?
There's a compromise, of course, right? I mean, like, there's always the ideal of, you know, it would be great to have to shoot some of this stuff on, you know, the latest medium format, whatever. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard of a guy's name is Asher Svizensky or something. If he's watching this, I'm sorry, I just butchered your name. he's a photographer in he's Israeli and Russian, I believe, and so he's like this weird mix, and he's like grim and very like big beard and goes out into the wilderness and photographs super remote stuff. He did the National Geographic cover of the Eagle Hunters, the girl, one of the young girl Eagle Hunter. That's his photo, you know, and his, I actually did ask him the gear question because I was like, you know, his presentations were amazing. His photography is awesome. Mm-hmm. But he says, you know, the cover of National Geographic, the photo's soft.
Is that what he said, really? Like,
come at me. But I mean, he was using like a secondhand, like really, really old, you know, extremely beat up 1DX, you know, and some of like my favorite photos of his that he did with some mining communities up in northern Mongolia, like really not easy to get to, you know, it's pure noise. And, you know, even the focus question about the story and the images, like you just look at it and you're just captivated by it. Like, I don't care if the eyelashes are in focus, like I am so enthralled with the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I did actually have to ask because I was just like, he was shooting in such difficult lighting conditions. I was like, how are you doing this? And he's like, I'm pushing the ISO as hard as that sensor's going to go and further.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. And I was like, cool.
That's sweet.
You know, and he's like, yeah, these photos aren't very good. And I was like, they're amazing photographs. Like, these are examples of what photography is supposed to be.
Pushing, you know, it, like, pushing it to its limits. Yeah. Because,
exactly.
Because of the vision that you're trying to get. One of the things that also strikes me about your work, Renee, is all of your photos, I was going to say most of, but I can actually correct that. All of your photos have story behind them, right? You're telling stories in the photo. Even the girl jumping off the building with the wings, the angel wings and all that. There's a story, even if it's not literal. You can like kind of make it up in your head versus, okay, here's a shot, a long exposure shot of a pier in black and white, you know, or whatever. There's something going on in there. Is that conscious? Do you have like all these storylines in your head, either or in your dreams, that you have to make real somehow? Where, like, how does that work?
I mostly just like to write enough of a story to get someone's brain writing their own story.
Mm.
I don't want to tell people what to think or how to think, which speaks on a lot of levels. you know, I'm not interested in telling people, you know, like, oh, this is my like emotional state over like blah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't really care. I mean, like, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that in my blog. You know, you want to know about what I think and how I feel, read the words that I write. It's not necessarily in the photographs. I find for the stuff that I make, because I'm not representing reality 90% of the time, right? You know, it is some form of, you know, and the word is used a lot, like blended fact and fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that people make more interesting stories than I can. So like there's an old image that I did, also one of the re-edited ones, with Little Red Riding Hood, and she's got the blonde wig and, you know, this white dress, and her hands are like this with the red hood, and there's like blood and gore all over her dress. It's one of the few like really gory images loose. I mean, the gore hounds are like gore. Haha, that was cute.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's one of the more like gore-esque themed images that I've done. And I have sold, that's one of my best-selling prints by far, which is surprising. you know, I've sold like a lot of, especially at conventions, but everyone tells me a different story. Nobody has told me the same story twice. And I always thought that was so interesting, because when I made it, I was just like, oh, we got this white dress, we got the red hood, and I'm like, I called it Little Red's Bad Day. And that was it. Like, I didn't put anything more to it than that. And everyone tells me, you know, these like grandiose, like sometimes it's a simple story and sometimes it's this like crazy complex, you know, thing that starts off somebody's short story writing. And I always thought that was really cool. So I always try to make sure that whenever I'm making something, there's just enough to get someone's brain started so that they can write something that is important to them.
I like that. See, that is a perfect answer to that question. So you're looking at your work kind of as, you know, those, you ever seen those things where people, like, I forget what they call them, but they'll go a month and someone will write a chapter of a book, and then the next person will take the next chapter, and then they'll keep going. You ever seen that? I mean, it's like when they...
I just remember the stories around a circle where everyone's like, oh, you tell the same sentence, yeah, and they get back to you, and it's like, I like cats, and you get back, like, you know, Dumbo's a flying elephant. You're like, what? That's not at all what I said.
Yeah, No, totally. No, I love that stuff. This is cool. So if you continue this sort of mindset around process and where these stories come from, when you look at your work, how, and this is... having spoken to you before, I think I know the answer to this already, but I'm gonna put it out there anyway, for the audience. But how would you categorize yourself as an artist, like in terms of genre? You know, some people say, "Oh, Renee, yeah, she's a photographer," and some people say, "No, Renee is a compositing artist who specializes in fantasy." No, Renee is, you know, she does. Where would you put yourself, if any place, on that rainbow of genres?
I have never had an answer for that. I mean, if you go to my website, there is a digital art section, there is a big wave surfing section, there is a, you know, slightly sexy bodies section, you know, where it's like, it's fitness and boudoir and all this other kind of stuff. And then there's landscape as well. And I mean, like, everyone's like, oh, pick a brand and stick to it. And then I'm like, when I was building the website, I was actually really torn, and I sent out like a huge body of work to a bunch of friends that opinions that I trust, and I was like, how do I categorize this stuff? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's like, you know, just like find that one thing and stick to it and like dial in on it, which I agree on. But at the same time, I get paid for all that work. So then why not showcase it on my website? So I actually still don't know how to categorize what I'm doing, which is probably a gigantic hindrance, but at the same time, I just try to do everything that I put my hands on as best as I can.
Yeah, no, so. That's a good answer. Yeah, I mean, and I knew you were going to say that. So.
Yeah, you know this answer. It hasn't changed. I haven't come to some like big epiphany yet. No. Working on it. That would be nice if I was able to be like, yeah, I do this. You know, like some photographers are like, oh, I'm a sports photographer, and I'm like, well, I do that too sometimes.
Yeah. Well, there's two more things. Look, we're almost out of time. We're almost at the top of the hour, and I still want to get to the Q&A. There's two more things I want to talk about. The first, we talked about Capture One a bit, so, you know, that's awesome. And I'm going to there's some questions in here about Capture One that I'll bring in. But the other question is, looking at your website, you're newly launched as of, This Week in Photo.
Last week.
Exclusive.
Yeah.
But looking at your website, you relaunched it on SmugMug versus some other platforms like Squarespace or WordPress or, you know, fill in the blanks. What was your thought process? Why SmugMug? And I love SmugMug. I have a SmugMug account and I love Flickr. Yeah. So what was the thought process behind that?
Well, because I was using both. I had SmugMug was running my print shop and like all my client galleries and everything like that. And then I had a WordPress site. And the reason behind that was because SmugMug's blogging system isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am not I'm not the person who does a ton of blogging. And so I thought about it, and this is over several years. I was like, well, you know, I should really just like consolidate them together. So what does that look like? You know, so I sat down with one of the designers and then like a lot of friends who build websites whose opinions I trust. And I was like, how do we make this look good? How do we make this work together? Because it's so nice being able to build my client galleries with all of their work. And then if they want prints, they just go like, they click through, they order, they buy, it shows up,
yeah.
You know, even with like digital downloads, you know, for commercial licensing, I can set the prices and then they can download the file that is the accurate size for that license. Right.
Yeah.
So it streamlines so much. The blogging is a workaround, but I mean, I blog twice a year, if that, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, you microblog. You're on social media doing the microblogging thing versus the articles, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The articles for me are like a really long process. I'll work on those for like, you know, 6 or 8 months in my head. The same thing as a Photoshop file. I work on writing the same way. I'll write the article in my head for months and months and months, and then it'll just like hit me one day, and then I'm awake for 2 days, and I just like spit this thing out. And the same thing happens with me with personal projects in Photoshop.
Wow, that's cool.
So it's just like, it's always cooking in the back of my mind, and I'm like, why can't I sleep? I don't know.
That's the true artist though, right? That's the true artist. The tortured artist. Like I'm gonna cut an ear off because I gotta get this thing out.
Been there sometimes. I don't recommend it. You know, people are like, I want the full time creative artwork. I'm like, no, you just wanna be happy making artwork and running through the field and daisies all the time is what we all want. Doesn't all right. mean because you're doing it for a living, that's what it is.
Renee, the other thing that I want to talk to you about, and I talked to Aaron Nace at Flern about this as well, and that's the addiction or reliance on Wacom tablets, right? Mm-hmm. And I know, and let me frame this, because I know some photographers, like a photographer I interviewed a couple of years ago, her name's Rebecca Gudlifstadter. She lives in Iceland. She does, you know, multiplicity shots, self-portraits, that kind of thing. Amazing stuff. And she does it all on she used to. I don't know if she's upgraded now, but she do it all on a crappy old model MacBook Pro, and all her editing was on the trackpad. And I mean, she was doing when everything was said and done, she was doing ad campaigns for Volkswagen and all these different companies on that same little computer without a tablet. Fine. You and Aaron and other people that I've talked to swear by the tablet. They need the pressure sensitivity, all this stuff. Tell me what your mind process is behind that tablet and why you need it.
Okay, well, here's the other thing, is I don't actually ever need it either. I mean, I love using it, but I actually give myself every like 4 weeks or something a trackpad challenge. And I actually edit.
See, that's the nerd in you coming out. The nerd.
I actually edit a ton of stuff on my trackpad. So like if I'm not doing detailed masking, if I don't have to pull out my Wacom tablet and I can actually just edit from bed with the computer on my lap with like a 76 hard drive scattered on different pillows. You know, if I don't need to load up the full system, I won't. But I mean, admittedly, there's like just big jobs where there's like super detailed masking where I need it. But I mean, if I'm just going through and doing, like, let's say, for example, we did the horse shoot this weekend with all the like knights in armor and stuff like that. You know, I shot a ton of stuff that was just like behind the scenes, like, hey, memories for everyone who came out, right? Like, I don't need my Wacom for that. I mean, I can literally just like push sliders in Capture One and then go into Photoshop and just do like a little bit of whatever it is I need to do.
Yeah.
And it's done. But I love the Wacom for the pressure sensitivity. I mean, since I got the Wacom Mobile Studio Pro, that is awesome. I mean, I love my Wacom. I have an Intuos, one of the new ones. It's a medium, but it's a size small of what the previous Intuos version was, and it's a small. Mm-hmm. And I have that mapped down to like a couple inches so that I'm not damaging my joints anymore. So because I do so much editing, I was destroying my elbow, my wrist, and my shoulder.
Yeah.
So I mapped it down so like I can go across the screen by just these tiny, tiny, tiny micro movements, which is super handy. But for when I'm doing like, let's say any digital illustration, like that Wacom Mobile Studio Pro to draw on is so smooth and so nice. And I love it. But I do notice right away that, you know, within a couple days of using it all day, my shoulder is like, hey, can you stop? Because I mean, I destroyed my right shoulder in an accident when I was a teenager, and, you know, doing a bunch of other stuff, just being dumb, so my shoulder is a weak point, and so I have to know, like, I know when to draw that line.
Yeah.
You know, so I can work on the Mobile Studio Pro for a few hours a day, but then I'm back on like the editing tablet after that. But the pressure sensitivity, especially for doing illustration and like really detailed masking, is brilliant. It's so nice.
Love it. Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Let's move right along. I want to move into the Q&A segment. We've got a couple minutes left. I want to dive in and take some questions from the live viewers. By the way, folks, if you're in the chat room, go ahead and post us a message if you want to ask Renee a question, and give us a thumbs up, a like, you know, so that, you know, give the This Week in Photo channel some love. Let's start from the top here. Let's see. I'm going to move down. There's a lot of Renee adoration in here, so I'm going to...
Rut row.
People love them some Renee. Okay, let's see. What's the first good question in here? Moving down. All right, here's one from Nick. So Nick says he would love to know how Renee organizes all the images in that treasure bag for later use. How do you organize your images?
It gives most people anxiety. I have basically a section for travel, which is basically all the places that I visit to. Then I've got a section for clouds, and I've got a section, like basically sections for atmospheric stuff. But if I visit the same place twice, then it's the same title. It's like I have everything sorted by country. So like, because I've shot a lot in Scotland, so I've got Scotland, you know, and that's the first part of the folder. And it's just folders. Like it's Windows folders. It's not organized in Lightroom or any of that crazy stuff. Because I'm always afraid that, you know, if a computer's going to die and then I have to go work on a computer that isn't mine, I have to be able to find everything. So I make sure everything is in hard drives that work for everyone. Sorry, yeah. We're getting a phone call here.
That's cool.
Anyways, but yeah, so I make sure that I can find everything that I need to if ever my workstation dies. So yeah, it's the country and then the location of where it is. And then the year, if I've been there twice. So it'll be like, you know, okay, this is 2015, this is 2018. So then I instantly know, okay, that was shot on a 5D Mark II, this was shot on the 5D Mark III.
And you're building that yourself. So you're manually doing that. That's not some automated process that looks at the metadata and builds a hierarchy.
No, I don't have anything automated yet. Mostly because like I've seen what happens when friends of mine lose their computers and, you know, like let's say a glass of water gets spilled on it and completely fries the whole thing. Their entire organization structure is in really bad shape sometimes, and I'm kind of just afraid of that. Like I'm always just like nervous enough that I think the entire world's gonna fall apart. So I'm like, what is my worst case scenario, and we plan for that.
Yeah. Love it. Cool. All right, Nick. Thanks for that that question. Here's another one. This is from Trevor. So Trevor says, there are so many reasons why Capture One is better than Adobe for tethering. It's not even in the same universe. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Their tethering is unreal. It is so, so good. Yeah. I used to, the only reason I had Lightroom back in the day was for tethering, to shoot tethered to the computer. And then Capture One version 8 came out, and this was long before I started working with them. And I was like, oh my God. Like mind explodey. Oh, this is so amazing. And it was really good. And that was version 8, and we're on version 12 now. Yeah. And it's only been getting better and better and better. So yeah, I love the tethering system in Capture One. It's
well, here's
awesome.
Here's a follow-up to that, to Trevor's question. Thanks, Trevor, for that. Follow-up question is from Eddie Lagos. And Eddie says, Renee, could you recommend some free stuff to learn Capture One, or even some stuff you have to pay for?
Phase One blog.
Where is it?
The Phase One blog.
Oh, the Phase One blog. Okay.
Yeah, they have like a video thing, like David Grover does like all these incredible little video snippets. Some of them are only a few minutes long. Some of them are quite long, like half an hour or an hour. And it's awesome. There is so much information on there and it's completely free. It's really, really, really good. I mean, they sometimes do webinars as well. And don't quote me on that, whether they're free or not. I'm sure they are, but I could be misinformed on that. Phase One blog, they have a whole video thing, and on YouTube you can just binge,
you know,
and from the guy who knows it all. Yeah, David Grover is like the man who knows Capture One extremely well and articulates it very well.
Nice. All right, yeah. Eddie Lagos, thanks for that.
Hey, you should have him on here one day. He's amazing.
Cool, I will. Eddie, yeah. Contact me. Troy Miller's in there. He's responding to Eddie.
Oh, hey, Sky Swapper. How's it going, Troy?
Troy says Capture One YouTube channel has a lot of great content. They do regular webinars as well. So
There you go.
Right there. Let's see. Let's move on. Lots of questions in here. Lots of Renee love. Everybody loves Renee. What is up with that?
That is a lie. But I'm glad that the feedback tonight is good.
Let's see. Commercial photographer. People are saying they love Bridge. Here's one from Ruth. Let's bring Ruth's question up on screen here. So Ruth Hample says, question for Renee, how do you organize and find the photos you take to incorporate into layers? So it's one thing to build those folders. How do you find those shots once you've built that hierarchy?
Honestly, just the digging through and going through the folders is actually good for getting the brain going. So I'll have an idea of like, you know, oh, well, like I wonder, like a castle would be nice. So I just did a composite 2 days ago. Or was it yesterday? I don't remember anymore. You know, of like this woman in this full suit of armor on top of this horse. And when I photographed it, I was like, oh my God, I want to put some kind of castle-y something behind it. I don't know what. And so I just started like digging through some of the castle footage that I have. Yeah. And then it turns out that I had this photo, from when my sister and I and a friend of mine were in Germany, of this castle way back on a hill. And I originally had tried putting in stuff closer and I was like, oh, it's too claustrophobic and it doesn't really work. So just kept like scrolling through until all of a sudden, you know, it's like ding, there's a thing. You know, I equate it kind of like, you know, when you meet somebody, how do you know you're going to be friends? You know, like you walk into a room where you don't know anybody and all of a sudden there's just like this little like pink and you're like, oh, I'm going to try talking to that one. And that's kind of what it's like for me when I'm digging through files is I'm like scrolling. And my subconscious brain is like way smarter than I am. And it's like, you should pay attention to that file.
But there's no, you're not using any sort of like metadata or tagging or anything to find the photos.
No,
it's more
should,
of it's you kind of have a gray matter based cataloging system up there, right?
A Rolodex. Sometimes deletes files. The Rolodex papers just go flying everywhere sometimes and I don't know where they went. Yeah, it's not
the
great.
Renee Robin Dewey decimal system up there.
Oh, it's awful.
Cool. All right. Thank you for that, Ruth. All right, here's a question from Nick. So Nick says, question for Renee, for someone interested in getting into compositing for a living, spend some time on personal projects and build a portfolio or seek out gigs for experience. Should they do self projects or should they look for gigs? What do you think?
All of the above. Why would it be one or the other? I mean, everything's going to give you experience. Whether you want to do it full time or not isn't really... It isn't always up to you. I mean, it is up to you, but it also isn't up to you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you live in an area where that kind of work is really challenging or, you know, your personality doesn't translate well online, so people don't really want to interact with you. Or maybe it does, and it's awesome. There's so many variables into doing, like, you know, all this stuff for a living that are sometimes not always in your control. So you can just do your best to be prepared to show up, which means creating a gigantic body of work and working at it all the time.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're an entrepreneur with a service. So you have to have a good service and then you have to be able to run a good business.
Yeah.
So it's so much more than just like, oh, I'm good at composites. Well, congratulations. There's a kid in Brazil who's 14 years old who's 100 times better than you are. How are you going to beat them?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's this kid, Mario OM. He's in South America and I saw his work and he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I sent him an email and I was just like, dude, I am terrified of you in 5 years. Like, you know, he's already just killing it. He's so, so good. And I'm so excited to see where he comes from. Sorry, I just hit the table. But I mean, your competition is the entire planet.
Yeah, that's true. Which makes everybody better, right? So you gotta.
I love it. I think it's great. I'm super excited to be expired. I'm excited to be able to like not keep up with the industry anymore because of what the quality of work is going to be. I think it's amazing.
I like that. I'm gonna use that quote. I'm excited to be expired. That's
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna have to figure out how to pay my bills again, but I figure by then I'll be tired of it anyways.
Well, you'll expire. you will expire, and you'll like, you know, reinvent like a moth, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah, like a moth, like a dirty, dusty, bapping against the light bulb moth.
Annoying people that are trying to have it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Nick, thanks for that. Here's another one from Tech Shaman. Hey, Tech Shaman, look at that. So Tech Shaman says, would love to know if she might try using the new iPad Pro with Photoshop for iOS. You know, Adobe's about to release Photoshop on the new 2018 iPads. Would you incorporate that into your workflow?
So I know people who are doing that, and that sucks because there's no real external storage device, easy access stuff going on. I mean, a girlfriend of mine, she did exactly that. She's got a big workstation. She went to the iPad, and she's so excited. She's like, oh my God, I can't wait to do everything on the iPad, and I'm never, ever using my laptop ever again. Until she has to load everything onto the cloud and then download the stuff off of the cloud to work on the iPad Pro. And then it's just like that kind of a backlog being bandwidth would make me absolutely nuts. I would hate that. So is the iPad Pro amazing and extremely like, you know, efficient once the stuff is on there? I think so.
Yeah.
But I also run into the problems of which part of the reason why my computers are so big is cooling.
Right.
Sure, processors can handle the work all day long, and the technology inside, we got to keep it cold. So I'm going to do, sit it on a fan, like, then it's just, you're back
to a block of ice.
Well, yeah, you don't do that. But I mean, like, you know, you still have to be able to keep it cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I wonder if an iPad, I have an iPad, I have one of the new ones, the 256 gig, 11 inch, and I wonder, I want to stress test it when Photoshop comes out, and I wonder, can it handle that kind of stuff? Like, can it handle, you know, multi-dozen layer Photoshop images and
can it handle it for 8 hours a day?
And it can't handle it long term, or will it melt and leave a mark on my lap or something, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. So like, those are the questions that aren't quite answered yet. And I mean, it would be great. I would absolutely love to not have to carry around a super heavy laptop all the time. That would be great. I don't carry this thing around because I like it and because it's like this cross I want to bear. Like, absolutely make this stuff paperweight.
Yeah.
Some quantum crap that goes into this stuff. Like, make it happen. I don't want to carry the weight.
Oh, that would be so killer. Like, if someone like you is able to create the work like you create on a device like an iPad and do it without many compromises, that's just magic. That's when we're in that no compromise zone there, because that changes architecture of buildings in ways like, you know, you look at how flat screen televisions changed how houses are designed. You know, there's no more like nooks to put the big Sony Vega in there. You know, it's like put them on the wall. Yeah, I think stuff like that happens, and home offices change, all kinds of changes happen. So
Like, one of the things I noticed when I was working on the Wacom, though, is so with the iPad, you're going to run into the same problems. You still need a keyboard. I mean, I don't know about how other people create, but like, I have my entire keyboard completely remapped to like a whole bunch of shortcuts. And with the Wacom, there's like 6 buttons on the side. And I'm always like, oh crap, which button was that? And I like push them all. And then like Photoshop does like a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't want that. Which button was Control Z? So it really slows me down. And so the iPad had run into the same problem. Of course, you just get a Bluetooth keyboard. But then once again, you're just like, you're back to multiple devices. You're adding weight, so on and so forth. So it depends on your workflow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can make an iPad Pro work for you, absolutely do it. I can't wait for the technology to be lightweight for me to be able to do it.
It's coming. It's absolutely coming. Here's a question from AJ Porter. AJ Porter says, ask her if she would marry an Irishman.
There would be explosive fights and probably deaths. Probably not a good idea.
All right, AJ, I'm guessing that's a no. All right, so David Perry says, what's the best way to source high quality background image background images? A lot of stock photography is already heavily color graded, making the composite with your own images less flexible. What do you say to that?
Yeah, that part sucks. That's why I shoot my own. The other option that you could do, as far as like best, it's not going to be the most time efficient, but a good way to do that is to make friends with photographers around the world who shoot landscapes, and be like, hey, I'm looking for something like this. Do you have any raw files? I'll kick you some pocket change. I mean, if you're going to be paying for stock files anyways, it might be a good way to get yourself some raw files that are useful, or even just like track down the photographer who shot it, you know, on the stock website, which I'm sure breaches some contract agreement somewhere. But, you know, you might not be able to get the same image because, of course, those images belong to whatever agency is selling them. Yeah. But they might have other stuff, or they might be able to go back out there and photograph some stuff for you. So it just might involve thinking outside the box a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. All right, David, thanks for that. Here's a comment from Tammy Wallace, not a question. She says, hello, no questions, just happy to see you happy and working. The website is stunning. Look at that. See, there are nice people in the world. Look at that.
There's a lot of nice people in the world.
Yes, yes. All right, let's see. Okay, here's another question. I think this one's from Trevor. Let's see what Trevor says. He says, this week in photo, is there something about telephoto lens work that's conducive to compositing work? I've seen a lot of mid to telephoto composite pieces, and they seem to be quite strong. When you're shooting your pieces of your composites, Renee, are you shooting them in telephoto, or do you lean towards that? Any reason for that?
All of the above. I mean, all of it always depends on who I'm shooting and what it's for.
Yeah.
Sorry, another phone call.
No, it's okay. You're good.
I mean, I like doing some composites that are telephoto. I mean, I find that how blurry stuff gets, your depth of field is way more crunchy. So sometimes it's easier to composite stuff that is, you know, that compression.
Yeah.
But then also the wide angle stuff I think is really nice too, but it is a little bit more picky. So,
okay.
I mean, it's 6 of one, half a dozen of the other. I mean, why would somebody choose to do digital painting over analog painting?
Yeah, yeah.
Because what you like to do.
It depends. It depends, right?
Yeah, I hate saying that there's like, this is the way. I'm not that person to say that answer.
It's art, and you know, there is no one right way. Okay, here's one from Lord Huey. Lord Huey says...
No, Lord Huey. I know that name.
He says, how do you decide how and what sceneries to take for composites?
I just shoot everything. I'm like Pokemon, gotta catch
reckless abandon, right?
yeah. No, I'm just like, I'm somewhere that lights up the synapses in my brain, and I'm just like, woo, this is awesome! Yeah. And then I just like photograph a bunch of it. And then I like maybe don't use it ever, or maybe I do. Yeah. But I mean, like, I have a specific style. I mean, I know what I like, which helps.
Like, if you're walking around...
The hard part is predicting future brain me, because it was like current brain me, which was like 4 years ago, where current brain me is like, I like this, but what happens if I shoot it like this? And then I don't use those files for 4 years. And then now when I'm reworking all the work and I'm like, oh my God, I wonder if, yes, I did shoot it differently. And I'm so excited that I have this file. Or other times where I'm just like, no, I should have done that. I know I was thinking about it and I didn't.
Yeah.
Pokemon, man. Gotta catch them all.
All right, Lord Huey. Thank you for that. Richard Pochop says, what's your favorite mobile app in photography?
I don't use them. I
you
have
don't use
Instagram.
Mobile? I for sure thought you were going to say Snapseed. You love Snapseed.
Nope. No, I don't use any of them. I used Mixtures for a little while, but I mean, my iPhone is literally for taking pictures of strangers' cats.
Yeah.
And I don't really post it anywhere else for me.
All right,
I'm like people's dogs.
I'm looking for new questions. I think that's it. I think we got them all.
Yeah, I think we got them all.
Okay. Nice. Very good. Well, thanks, everybody, for your questions. We ran a little bit over, but that was good. So, Renee, any final thoughts? I mean, we covered sort of the, you know, a little bit of your workflow. I know you got lots of stuff online that people can go check out anyway. We talked about a little bit of the Photoshop workflow. We talked about your Capture One. We talked about the output and sharing on SmugMug. Anything else you want to add, you know, in terms of how Renee Robin does her thing?
I mean, just diversify your study more than anything.
Yeah.
If you're interested in one thing, then try learning other things and see how you can apply it to that.
Yeah.
That's
interesting. Like when I look at your work, it's both inspiring and intimidating.
Well, thank you. You should see the work that I look up to, though.
well, thank you. All right, here's one more question from Nick, and this is a perfect one, Nick, to end it on. Let me bring it on screen here. So Nick says, "How do you know when you're done with an image?"
How do you know when you're done a fight? When there's no clear winner.
Yeah.
When you just get tired of fighting.
It's back to that relationship analogy, right?
Oh my God, but that's like totally how it is for me. You know, like how I know when I'm done is sometimes it's a logical decision. Sometimes it's my left brain being like, oh, A, B, C, D equals E.
Yeah.
And we have arrived and that's exactly what we need. And then there's the other times where I'm like, I'm just feeling this one out. And then it takes forever because I'm like running on my feelings and they're not to be trusted. And then, you know, it turns into this thing where I look at it and I'm just like, I'm tired of looking at it. I think it looks okay. I think it feels okay. Maybe I've been staring at it for too long.
Kind
of stuff. I mean, it's different for everyone.
There's no point where the image says, I'm done, you're finished.
Sometimes it happens. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you like work on it and it's just like, bing, you know, you've walked into a room and you found your new best friend, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, we're going to have the best friendship ever. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes that's what that's like. And then other times it's not.
Love it. Well, Renee Robin, thank you so much for your time tonight. This is perfect. You did a great job. Fantastic.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the questions, guys. Super appreciate everyone checking in.
Yeah, those are great questions. Those are really great questions. What a great audience. What if people want to, you know, reneerobinphotography.com, right? That's the URL. reneerobinphotography.com if you want to check out Renee's work. Any other places where you'd like people to go to connect or otherwise stay in touch with you?
I mean, well, there's like, you know, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, there's all those kinds of things. Those are like the big ones. Those are the ones I'm most active on. I've completely forgotten my login for Flickr. So if you search that, you're going to see work that's like 7 years old.
Are you coming back?
No,
are you
now that
SmugMug has reinvigorated Flickr, are you going to come back?
Maybe. I was never really big on Flickr, though, ever.
Yeah.
I never really used it. I kind of just like chose the things I wanted to and like shut the doors to everything else. But I mean, if there's a good photo community that allows nipples that isn't going to get, like, you know, accounts shut down, then all right, Flickr, we can play nice.
yeah. Well, that, you know, good luck with that.
Over that shit.
Good luck with that, because, you know, that's like, even when we do our photo critiques on This Week in Photo, we do them and they get posted to TWIP, but they also go into the TWIP YouTube channel. And, you know, I don't want to censor people, so I don't want them to not post photos, but the group is so awesome, they will censor themselves and put the little black tape over nipples or whatever, you know, so that I appreciate that, because
we're sending you to hell.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise all morals and whatever aside, that if YouTube will block you and give you an explicit and all that stuff. So yeah, it's sad, but it is what it is. It's the world we live
in. It's the pony show for now.
Yeah. All right, Renee Robin, thank you so much for your time tonight. We'll see hopefully I'll see you in Vegas at WPPI, right?
Yeah, I'd like to be there. That's the plan so far. I missed New York a couple of years in a row, but I haven't missed a WPPI yet in a few years, so we'll see what happens.
Okay. All right. And thanks, everyone, for showing up in the chat. I appreciate you. Yeah. And if you want to keep up with all things This Week in Photo, obviously, you can head over to thisweekinphoto.com or go to thisweekinphoto.com/subscribe and subscribe to our podcasts, etc. Give us a thumbs up. You can like us on YouTube to make sure that we keep the lights on around here and keep this green screen behind me going. So, all right, folks, it is time to take that lens cap off.
This is TWIP.